This edition of the Monaco Arts Review was first broadcast on the 9th of December 2015 on Monaco 24. Welcome to the Monaco Arts Review with me, Fernando Augusto Pacheco. As this is the very last television review of 2015, we're going to look back over the year that was and discuss some of our TV highlights. Joining me in the studio today is Monaco's very own square-eyed Ben Rylan, who spent plenty of time glued to the screen this year to share some of the best bits with us. And these best bits include the ongoing rise of Netflix, the finale of ad drama Mad Men, and superheroes swooping in from the silver screen to the small screen. That's all to come here on the Monaco Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Ben. It's a pleasure to have you here to discuss your top TV choices from the past year. I know you're a big TV buff, so I trust your choices will be excellent. Let's talk first about the final season of AMC's Mad Men. It's been one of, if not the most popular series of the decade. Were you one of those who loved it from day one?
Yes, definitely, Fernando. When you told me to pick my top picks for the year, at first I was very, very daunted. And then I had a quick look at some of the series that I've loved in recent times, and I realized, actually, it's incredibly easy to pick what the best TV was for this year, because, my God, I think that the way that we look back at 1939 for films, I think we might look back at 2015 for television, because it does feel as though TV came of age this year. And Mad Men, I think, is probably at the top for where we look at this genre that's come to the fourth now, that we call premium cable. And I think that was really started with HBO when they started with Sex and the City, and they wanted to bring that independent film look to television, and it was hugely successful and basically changed the way in which we view television. And then they bettered that when they brought out 6 Feet Under. And I think that really planted the seeds for where we've got to with Mad Men, which is, in my opinion, I think it has to be the most perfect television series that we've seen in recent times.
Well, let's hear the clip for Don Draper, which is the main character of the show, before we talk about the finale. I want to hear your opinion about it.
I don't think your 3 months or however many thousands of dollars entitles you to refocus the core of our business.
Listen, I'm not here to tell you about Jesus. You already know about Jesus. Either he lives in your heart or he doesn't. Every woman wants choices. But in the end, none wants to be one of 100 in a box. She's unique. She makes the choices, and she's chosen him. She wants to tell the world he's mine. He belongs to me, not you. She marks her man with her lips. He is her possession. You've given every girl that wears your lipstick the gift of total ownership.
And I want to hear your opinion about it. Do you think the series ended on a good note? Because, you know, you just praised, you know, Mad Men, saying it's one of the best series you've ever seen. I mean, did it end it well?
Yeah, I think it really did. It ended exactly as you would expect Don Draper to finish off his time on television. It was not with a bang. It wasn't with a whimper, though, either. It ended in character. And, I mean, there was a lot of discussion. And for anyone who hasn't seen the final episode, just let me tell you now, I'm not going to spoil it for you. But there was a lot of discussion over whether Don Draper's character had actually progressed, or whether he just gone right back to the beginning in the final season. But I think all of that is unfounded, because as the series creator Matthew Weiner, who has always had so much to do with this series, and every episode has his stamp of originality on it, he was never ever going to give in to what any of the critics were saying, what any of the viewers were saying. He's not responsive to any of that. Mad Men exists in its own world, and I think with the final season that we saw earlier this year, that was really proven even more in the best possible way. It enriched the characters, and I mean, as we heard in that clip just there, Don Draper has always been a character who can understand what consumers want so easily and so specifically, but he still does not understand any of the people that he has relationships with. And that really makes him such a fascinating character. You've got this huge dose of duopoly running all the way through the series, and that permeates him as a character, it permeates the relationships he has, it even permeates his life, where he seems to be... it doesn't matter how many relationships he goes through, he can't have one relationship without having another relationship happen at the same time. And it really touches upon the core of the human condition, and I think that's why it resonates with people so well.
Before we move on, Ben, I just want to, you know, it might be a tough question, but which series do you think might fill Mad Men's shoes, if there will be one?
There's no series to fill Mad Men's shoes just yet, and I think that's healthy. That's how it should be. Mad Men set the bar so high that we're going to need to wait a little while before something else can come along and really slip into that place. It was the same when 6 Feet Under ended. You couldn't fill that void just yet. You've got to let people digest for a bit.
Well, Ben, thank you very much. I think now we should move on to Netflix. I mean, I think 2015 was the year of Netflix in a way. It really established itself as a big competition for the major broadcasters. Do you think any other platforms, before we talk about some of the Netflix series this year, do you think any other platforms might rise in 2016? Or do you think Netflix will continue its stream of success?
Netflix will definitely continue its success because it is heading in the right direction. And I know we're going to have a chat about Daredevil in a little while, but Netflix have not long premiered Jessica Jones. And that's another Marvel series, but boy, is it's taking a step away from what we've come to expect from comic book series. And that is a strength to Netflix. They're in a very, very, very good position. They can really push the buttons, they can pull the strings, and they can do whatever the hell they want. And that's exactly what they're doing, and people are responding to that. So they are definitely the ones to watch. However, Amazon Prime are starting to make some waves as well, and we've not long seen The Man in the High Castle, which is doing quite well, getting a lot of great reviews. I haven't managed to fit that into my busy TV schedule just yet, but I am looking forward to it. But, you know, Amazon have also fallen over a little bit as well, and they do suffer from trying to be everything to everyone, and I think that might be a bit of a heavy load.
Well, let's talk about some of the Netflix successes this year. Of course, we had the third season of House of Cards, and of course, House of Cards, I believe, was the first major hit for Netflix. But I wonder, what's your view on the third season as well? I heard it was not as, you know, good as the first and second season. Might be controversial. I want to hear your opinion about it.
Well, this is the problem that I think we all saw coming once Frank Underwood became president. You kind of looked at that and you thought, well, the dog has been chasing the car for so long. The dog has finally caught the car. What's the dog going to do with the car now? And as we expected, there seemed to be some uncertainty with what they could do with this character. And we went from seeing this deliciously malicious, if I can say that, character who was just having so much fun crawling his way to the top. And then all of a sudden he's there. And it's just like a toddler playing with his toys in a very rowdy fashion. But I mean, the later season of House of Cards was still interesting if you are interested in the characters. And that's why I still enjoyed it. And there is a bit of an issue that I have with House of Cards, though, and that is that it sets up some storylines and it sets up some angles that it seems to be going in, but it leaves them unresolved. And some people will say that about Mad Men as well, but Mad Men does it in a kind of a different style where it feels like it feels more loyal to real life. When you watch it in House of Cards, this doesn't actually feel like real life. You know that this is a completely crazy out there alternate reality. So when they do go off in these different directions, it comes across more like an uncertainty. And I'm hoping that at some point with the next season, which is still happening at the moment, they're still in the process of making that. I'm hoping that they will resolve some of those loose ends.
Well, Ben, let's move on to another Netflix series, but from a completely different topic, which is, you know, is Narcos, which is on the life of cocaine trafficker from Colombia, Pablo Escobar, and was directed by a Brazilian director, José Padilha, with Wagner Moura as the main actor. And my question for you is, it was very brave for Netflix to do a series, which I believe was quite a few times subtitled, actually, because they were talking in kind of a slang Spanish, but it was a success. It's funny because major broadcasters, I don't think they would ever put Narcos on their prime time.
No, they wouldn't. And that is why, if you are a fan of television, of good television, then you have chosen the right time to be alive, if you were lucky enough to choose what era you were born in, of course. This is an absolutely fantastic series. And as you mentioned there, Fernando, yes, they do. A lot of the episodes are actually told almost completely with subtitles. And, I mean, if it weren't for Netflix, I don't think mainstream audiences, if you can call it mainstream, would have ever considered sitting down to watch a whole television series that's told with a lot of subtitles. But Netflix went ahead and did it anyway, and they succeeded. And they succeeded because it is thoroughly, thoroughly good television.
We don't need subtitles here in Monaco. Let's play a clip of Narcos.
I'm Steve Murphy, drug enforcement agent. 79, the bad guys I was chasing wore flip-flops.
Why are you running, huh? What you got? What is that?
When I started, a 1 kilo grass bust was cause for celebration. Before long, we were seizing 60 kilos of coke a day. The hippies had been replaced by Colombians, and these guys didn't wear flip-flops. We were witnessing the formation of the famed Medellin cartel. There was Jose Rodriguez Gacha, the Ochoa brothers, and last but not least, Pablo Escobar.
Ben, before we move on to superheroes, I just have a personal curiosity here. What do you think about Wagner Moura's performance as Pablo Escobar?
Look, I thought he was absolutely fantastic, and there are lots of different facets that have to go into playing a character like this, and it would be very difficult no matter who they are. Now, I know that there were some criticisms laid at his accent. Now, it's difficult for me to comment on that because, of course, I am Australian. I can't pick up on his accent. I'm relying on the subtitles. So as far as humanizing someone who was an utterly defenseless, awful person, yes, he did a very, very good job, because when I'm watching this, sometimes I do feel myself feeling for his character, even though he was a merciless killer.
Well, Ben, finally, it wasn't only the cinema screens that were under attack by superheroes. It seems there were plenty of superheroes in the small screen as well. We had two admirable series, Daredevil and Supergirl. But let's start with Daredevil, I mean, which you mentioned at the beginning of the show, which is also a Netflix production. They are everywhere. It's a pretty dark series. Can you tell us about the story for this one?
Sure. So there are some people who might remember an aborted attempt at starting a Daredevil movie franchise a little while ago with Ben Affleck in the lead role. Jennifer Garner, his future wife, was also in that film as well. Now, that film was not so good. And look, let's be clear, Daredevil has never been one of the main comic book characters for Marvel. So perhaps the film came about a little bit too early in the renaissance of the comic book on screen. This Netflix series seems to have come at exactly the right time. And Netflix have been able to make the absolute most out of a character who doesn't exactly come from the richest of origins. Daredevil is, he's secretly Matt Murdock, who is a lawyer who is also blind. He was blinded in some sort of accident when he was a child. He then grows up to turn into a bit of a vengeful force. So he goes out at night, and he becomes this character that eventually becomes Daredevil. That takes a long time to happen in the series. Now, the exact source of his enhanced abilities, we're not entirely sure what that is yet, just from the series. Fans of the comics, of course, will already know. The story of the series on Netflix revolves around gangs that are infiltrating Hell's Kitchen, the borough of New York. It's very much taking the story of a vigilante right back to its roots, and it's very raw, it's very action-packed, it's at times extremely brutal. It's a superhero show, it's done for adults, and it's done very well.
Well, finally, something perhaps less extreme or less violent. We had Supergirl at CBS, which, do you think, perhaps, tell us a bit more, was it a bit more campy and fun, perhaps?
Oh, yes. Now, this is something completely different, and I'm so glad that we get to talk about Daredevil and Supergirl with almost the same breath, because this is how you do superhero television on completely opposite ends of the scale and still make them so good. So on the other end, we have Supergirl, of course, which feels very much as though it feels very much like Supergirl became a character in Glee. That's the tone that we're going for here.
Sounds good to me.
Exactly. And Greg Berlanti, the producer of Supergirl, who's also the producer of The Flash and Arrow, over on, on rival networks in the US anyway. Now, they all come from basically the same family here. So often these series will pluck their cast members from Glee. And so we know that we're talking about the same family here. Supergirl does an absolutely tremendous job of making the character of what's essentially a fairly realistic girl into a superhero that's actually quite complex. So I mean, this is a feminist show. Let's be clear about that. It's done in a very, very clever way, so it doesn't feel like you're watching feminist television, but it's basically that's what it is. It's taking all of its characters extremely seriously. It's not going for the boring, obvious, sexualized angle. The character of Callista Flockhart, being an older female put into this world, is actually quite fascinating as well, and they do a very good job of humanizing her. She's not just there for a few nasty wildcracks in a Miranda Priestly sort of way. I'm very much a fan. I'm very much looking forward to what they do with this next.
Well, Ben, my final question, I want to hear your predictions. I mean, for 2016, is there any series that you're looking forward to see?
Oh, that's an extremely difficult one, Fernando. I'm looking forward to seeing how the American Horror Story franchise plays out. I do feel as though that might be inching closer towards its eventual demise. I think those sorts of things, when they rely too much on their one brand, can sometimes suffer under a bit of exhaustion. But I also know that there's another spin-off in the world of DC television happening as well, Legends of Tomorrow. So it will be interesting to see where that goes, because of course fans of the aborted attempt by Warner Brothers to bring Superman back to the movies in 2006, Brandon Routh was once the new Superman on the cinema screen. He's now playing a completely different superhero in this new series from DC Comics and Warner Brothers. So we'll see where that goes.
Ben Ryland, thanks very much for joining us, and I wish you a happy 2016 with lots of good TV. You've been listening to the Monaco Arts Review with me, Fernando Augusto Pacheco. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for this week's book review. But for now, thanks very much for tuning in.